Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock for the next 2 hours till noon. We're here talking about your cars, your problems, your questions, and you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem, and I have been a master tech in the auto repair industry for more than 25 years. Master tech means that there is a national company, actually it's a worldwide company, ASE, Automotive Service Excellence, and they have 8 categories for cars. And so I can never name all 8, but it's like air conditioning and heating, suspension, front end, drivability, transmissions, gearboxes, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, if you pass one test, then you are certified in brakes. If you pass the alignment front end, then you're certified in alignment front end. If you pass all 8 tests, you're a master tech. So I've been a master tech for a very long time. I've been in the car repair business for 39 years. One of the biggest questions I've been asked by a lot of people is where do I take my car? So I created the best car repair shops list. That dovetails nicely into telling you that one of the sponsors of this radio show is S&S Auto. S&S Auto is in Peoria. They're in Surprise and Goodyear. They have 3 locations. They've been around since 1976. And that's a common denominator in the shops that I'm promoting to you or telling you that I've thoroughly checked out. You have to have years and years of experience. You got to have a gray-haired guy somewhere in that process. You've got to have proven yourself. So nobody on my list was born yesterday, and nobody has been in business a year and a half. Everybody's got at least 5 years, and some of these guys have 40 years. So S&S has got since 76. They have a comprehensive list of tires. You can take your car in. They'll look at your size, and they'll give you good, better, best prices for 4 tires installed or 2 tires installed, whatever you want. They have tires from wheel bearings to tractors and everything in between. So if you have a lawnmower and you need a tire that's inflatable, then S&S may very well have it. They can also balance your new tires, and they do alignments and suspension work because they're there looking at your tires. So if you have a wear problem, they can correct it. So if you're in Peoria, Surprise, or Goodyear, S&S Tire has a location in your West Valley area, and I would strongly suggest that you stop and talk to them. You have nothing but time to lose, and I'm quite sure they'll make you happy. Let's go to the phones. Jerry, you're up first. How can I help you, Jerry?
Good morning, Mark. Good question I have for you is I've got a 2004 Chrysler Crossfire, and I just noticed I was having problems with some of the idiot lights. And what I found out is when I started looking, because I was having trouble with the ABS, I looked at the ABS. There's a plug, a bundle, wire bundle that goes into the ABS behind it.
Okay.
And I noticed that the wires are all chewed up.
Okay.
That's from those, I think, the pesky little desert field mice.
Yep.
What do you do to keep that from happening?
You know, there is just 150 ways that you can get on the internet. First of all, let me tell you, that's covered under your car insurance. Do you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I would check. I'm not an expert in car insurance, but I am an expert consultant for many of the insurance companies, and it is my opinion that that is a covered. Now, you need to get an estimate for the repair of that because chances are you need that harness. If it's above your deductible, say you have a $500 deductible and it's below that, then obviously you should just pay for it yourself and save your time, you save the claim. But you need to talk to your insurance agent and ask him if rodent damage is related. I don't know. I have the same problem you do. They chew on my tractors and they chew on my farm equipment. I don't know what to tell you. There are all kinds of traps. We've tried traps. Let me turn on your microphone. We've tried traps. We've tried baits. I was told the other day by somebody that they put lights underneath their car, and they felt that they had tremendous success.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's like a fluorescent tube that you slide underneath the car. I don't know if they just took some cheap trouble light and stuck underneath the car. I don't know the answer to that. I'm quite sure that someone could go through your car and figure out how they're getting in. And I think that might be some expandable foam type of a repair, or a piece of metal that had a whole bunch of silicone slapped all over it and covering up that particular area.
Is this inside?
It's an outside. I'm sure he's storing it outside.
Oh, I meant, is it they getting inside the car?
Yes.
Or not inside the engine compartment, just inside?
In the engine compartment, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to protect that.
Yeah.
I had one guy tell me that he wired up an electrical device that when they got on this metal screen, it melted them.
Ooh.
And I'm thinking to myself that I'm not quite sure that's something I want, because I'm not sure that I want our cars to smell like roasted rodent.
Yeah. Somebody said mothballs, too. I don't know if that would work.
Yeah.
They smell terrible.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you just Google rodent damage or rodents eating my car wires, something like that, and I think you'll find millions of things. It's not like you can raise it up off the ground, because I think those little bastards, they jump. I'm not quite sure. But I would imagine, too, a couple of phone calls to the rodent guys that are professionals at getting rid of those. But if you live in Wickenburg or Whitman, if you live in that kind of an environment, up near Anthem and stuff like that, that may just be something that you're going to have to put some traps out.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, you'll catch a cat or something like that. I don't know about you, but I usually relocate them to a different zip code. But I'm sorry that happened. Talk to your insurance company and perhaps do some of the stupid things I've suggested. But those are ones that people have told me they've done.
Okay. All right.
All righty. Thank you very much, Jerry. You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. See what we got. I love emails that are nice.
Mm-hmm.
I get enough of them who are not nice to me. You know what I mean?
Oh, you poor thing.
Today's topics was about your car. Another topic that's near and dear to me is that, and this is written by a tow truck driver.
Okay.
He said, if you would be so kind as to slow down and move over, as the law says. Now, when we go up and down the mountain, there's bicycle guys up on the Beeline Highway, and I always change lanes just in case, God forbid, that they were to hit something and fall into my lane.
Mm-hmm.
I look in my rearview mirror, and virtually nobody does that.
I know.
Gives the bicycle riders a clear. Sometimes they're on the road when they shouldn't be,
mm-hmm.
And so people are mad at them for that. But it's a good idea. But as far as police cars and tow truck drivers, I think the law says you've got to slow down and move over. It doesn't say speed up and zip by in the same lane.
Mm-hmm.
It says slow down and move over. So give them a lot of room, because the tow truck drivers are going to have to work on the driver's side of the tow truck in order to load the car. So they're talking about that. As of last week, 13 tow truck drivers have been killed so far this year. 13 operators who didn't go home to their families. So could you do a segment on your show that just advise people the law applies to all law enforcement, road workers, etc. That's move over and slow down. So, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah,
I'm happy
common
to do
courtesy,
that.
I would say.
All righty. Then we got Krista.
Okay.
This is a kind of letter I really like. I listen to your show whenever I can. I appreciate your attitude, your honesty, and your ability to solve my car problems. I should have read this first, because I wouldn't
attitude,
have read that first.
Attitude, yeah. Sometimes we don't like your attitude. Go ahead.
My husband and I live in Cave Creek, so we can't take our car to your place in Tempe. We went to the shops that you recommended, Kurtz. We are so impressed. We just got our car back today. We think they did excellent work with an honest price and great service. I thought you would want to know. Keep shining, Krista. That's a nice thing.
It is.
I get lots of comments about our shops. I got one from Tom at Action.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten ones from Kurtz. Billy at 25th Street Auto got S&S Tire.
Mm-hmm.
I've got lots of compliments. Thompson's in Mesa. I'm just kind of going through the list in my head. Martin's Auto, 16th Street. I think that's Osborne or Indian School. 16th Street and Indian School. And Larry Harker's, we had him on the show last week, 38th Avenue and Indian School. So we've got a lot of shops out there. And here's the issue. Oh, by the way, if you want to call in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Would you date these for me?
I would be happy to.
And I forgot where the heck I was going.
Oh, we're just talking about the best car repair shops. And, you know, we do get a lot of compliments, and people like to know that these people are good and honest, have been in business for a long time.
And here's the promise, and it's written on our website. This is the promise. If you use one of Mark Salem's shops, my shops, and if you have a problem, I want you to file a nice complaint with the Better Business Bureau. Now, I've been around the Better Business Bureau for more than 30 years. I was on the board of directors. I was going to be the chair of the board of directors, but I refused because I wouldn't wear a tie. So I've been around, and I helped create the Automotive Advisory Committee there, so I'm sure you're going to get a fair shake. But you file a nice complaint. If the Better Business Bureau comes back and tells the shop to make a refund or fix the car and the shop doesn't, this is one of my shops, Mark Salem will up to $5,000. So if it's a refund and it's $2,000 and the shop refuses to, then the shop's kicked off and I'll make the money. I'll make the payment. How many payments have we made since 1988?
None.
Not a one.
Not a one. We're you say your shops, the ones that you recommend that we know.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
my shops that are listed at MarkSalem.com.
Right.
So it's important to know that there's a distinction. Now, it's important that they're on my shop list. We had one drop off this year, the membership. They have to be invited by me. I have to investigate them. I'm looking at their insurance. I'm looking at their reviews. I'm looking at their management. They have to have been in business for 5 years. And many of these guys have been in the business for many years.
Yep.
So if you look, make sure that your shop is still on there because it has to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're exposed right now where we've got a shop on suspension, and we're exposed right now for about $2,000, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time it's got this deep and this bad.
Right.
And so there is a possibility I'll be writing a check. And if I do, I'm happy to do that because I promised you that's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else makes that guarantee. There's all kinds of places out there that are making money by telling you what dry cleaners to use and what garage to use and what contractors to use and all that kind of stuff. But mine's different. First of all, I was the first one in 1988 to do this, and everybody kind of followed me after that. I'm okay with that. And there's other car lists out there that have the majority of mine on their list as well. I'm okay with that. I'm flattered by that. My list is an easy one to follow because that's the way it is. But anyway, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or car problem. Gil is the one that answers the phone, and you're welcome to give us a call. 602-508-0960. I think we have five lines, and we're here at your service right here on the Car Show on KKNT. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We've got 2 hours of Car Show, and we're going to go right to the phones, as we always do. And if I can find the sheet, I'll call Carl. Carl, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yes, I've got a problem with a 2011 Ram diesel.
Okay.
It seems that every 2,000 to 3,000 miles, my O2 sensor goes out on it. Now, I've been back to a dealership 4 or 5 times. One time they'll clean it, then the next time they'll change it, then they clean it, then they change it. And they give me all kinds of different cures. Okay. And I don't really believe them, but I tried them all.
Okay. All right. Do you ever tow anything with this?
I used to, yeah.
Okay.
And I still do, yeah, I still do.
Mm-hmm. So you've got the Cummins 6.7?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. The high output.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Do you drive it as if there's a hot cup of coffee between your legs that's full, or do you drive it like a 16-year-old kid?
Well, I'm 70 years old, so I don't drive it like a 16-year-old kid. But when I do get out on the road, it's the speed limit.
Okay.
Or more.
All right. You're talking about the particulate filter. And
yes.
I think that's what you're talking about?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
West Phoenix. Glendale. I'm sorry. Glendale, everybody.
Okay. I think I would call Strictly Diesel up there. And I would talk to Nate. And Strictly Diesel is off Deer Valley and I-17.
Deer Valley and I-17.
And I would talk to him. It sounds like one of two things has happened. It sounds like they're guessing with your money. And and we're not making any progress. Now, I would say that no matter if you went to an independent shop, a chain store, or a dealer, it sounds like they're guessing with your money. It sounds like you've so you need somebody to look you in the eye, and you need to look them in the eye and say, "I'm not spending any more money guessing." Now, you're not going to hold Nate to the standard of this other clown that can't fix your car, but by the same token, you just say, "You know, what's your diagnostic charge?" And when you call me, I'm going to tell you now, I'm not paying for guessing. If you're going to be guessing, you need to tell me you're going to be guessing. And we need to make sure we understand whose money we're guessing with. Now, it's either going to be mine or yours. So I think what I would want you to do is I would want you to roughhouse this diesel a little bit more. For instance, when you get on the freeway, why don't you throttle it down pretty hard? You don't have to be doing 100. I mean, that truck will do 100 miles an hour, but it's not going to do 100 miles an hour from the top of the ramp to the bottom of the ramp.
Yeah.
So,
one of their cures was run the engine with the run it with the engine brake on all the time, and I tried that.
Okay.
And it run it to where I wouldn't go into overdrive, and I went just recently to Lake Havasu City and back. In sixth gear, didn't let it go into overdrive, and the day after I got back, the check engine light comes on again.
Okay. All right. I don't know what's going on. I can tell you my 2012 is the clone of your 2011, and I got 67,000, 70,000 miles on it, and I've never had the problems you're having, but I want to tell you, I'm hauling horses. I'm hauling tractors. I'm hauling Renee and all of her girlfriends. I'm loaded to the hilt most of the time, and I'm also a roughhouser, so when I'm going up a hill, I'm likely to go up in fourth gear. And I use my exhaust brake almost all the time. And so, and the exhaust brake helps keep the turbo vanes clean and operational. And so that's the reason why we're going to close the vanes on the turbo, which gives you the that kind of a noise, and it keeps everything nice and clean. But I think they're what they're saying to you is that you're carboning up this engine, and I just kind of need you to try. You know, when you're driving down the highway on the way to Havasu, you know, if you're going to pass somebody, you know, swing out, throttle up hard, pass them, and then back off the throttle. Just kind of roughhouse it a little bit more. But go see Nate. I feel very confident Nate at Strictly Diesel can help you.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
This is my fourth diesel.
I know, but you haven't had the I'm willing to bet you haven't had the sophistication and the emissions on the old diesels as you have on this one. Because this one, you can lock yourself in your garage for the rest of your life and you aren't going to die. So, and this one is, you know, a clean air diesel, and what comes out of the tailpipe is really clean, and we're going to take and burn the carbon twice, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. There's all kinds of emissions control devices on there, and the real question is what is the check engine light telling you? And if the question is the sensor telling you the truth, or is it lying? And if it's telling you the truth, then replacing the sensor is the definition of insanity. Because after you do it twice, why are we doing it? We need to figure out that the signal is telling us the truth, and we need to go back. You are reminiscent of people who come in, you know, the Fords that we have. Hello, Renee. The Ford?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
You know, when when Alan, our son, does regenerations, because we work on diesels, but we're clear across the valley from you, so I'm sending you to somebody closer to you. When we do a Ford regeneration, It's ugly. It is ugly.
Yeah.
We can't even have a trash can within 40 or 50 feet, a rubber trash can, 50 feet of the tailpipe, or it'll melt the trash can. So with a specific tool, we go in and we tell the computer to do a regeneration. And the computer then knows to raise the idle, lower the idle, add more fuel, shut the fuel off, do this, do that. And it does it all by itself. But you learn fast when you leave it into the shop and you go through the regeneration cycle. You catch the trash can on fire. You fill the whole shop with smoke. The alarms go off. The fire alarms go off. And you go, oh, this is probably something I should do outside.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Nate can help you. I can't tell you what's the matter with it, but I am 99% sure that Nate can fix it. So, anyway, Carl, thank you very much for that. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I got a question. I've got a Nissan Versa, okay?
Okay.
And I want to get the transmission. It's got the CVT transmission.
Yes.
I want to change the transmission oil according to what the maintenance schedule asks for. Where would I go to know that they did it right and they're familiar with the transmission and it's going to be done, you know, just the way it's supposed to be done?
Okay. If you call the shop and say, I have a CVT and a Versa, and I'm wondering what the cost is to do a transmission service. If they can give you a cost, then they've done it before. And each one of the CVTs is different. And so there is a process on most all of them that you have to, and really and truly, let me tell you, on a 1 to 10 scale in my world of repair, doing a CVT fluid change is really only a 3. It's time consuming, and it's a lot better with two guys, and it'll go twice as fast with two guys, while one does this and the other does that. But the issue is how much is it? How many of these have you done? And thank you very much. And then call two or three shops. I think you'll quickly find you'll be able to separate the men from the boys and the liars.
Okay, do you have any suggestions as far as, you know, somebody that would probably...
What part of town?
I can go anywhere, but let's say Mesa.
I would start with Thompson's Auto Repair at Main Street and Stapley.
Okay.
Thompson's Auto Repair at Main Street and Stapley.
Right.
I would start there. And what do you work or live any, or do you work or any other place in town? Do you go downtown?
My job sends me everywhere from Tolleston to Chandler, but I live in Casa Grande, so I'm always I can go anywhere.
Okay. Martin's Auto, Indian School and 16th Street.
Okay.
And right around the corner, 25th Street Auto, Billy at 25th Street and Indian School. Both of them are one at 16th, one at 25th. I know those three guys can handle your Versa.
All right. Sounds like a good deal, and I appreciate the answer. Have a good day.
And same to you. Ed, you stay right there because you're going to be my first caller. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Have you got anything to say? Just to sit there and make fun of me? You don't. You
that's
make
my
fun
job.
Of me. Yeah,
that's
you make
my job.
Fun of me, but they can't hear you because you mute your mic.
Yes.
And then your sign language is really driving me crazy. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And just like I promised, we're going to go to Ed, and then we're going to take a 15-second commercial break. But, Ed, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Oh, I've got a 97 Mazda B2300. You know, it's a real late model.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, throttle body injection, as you know. The problem is that the thing won't always idle down between shifts or if you're, sitting there in neutral at a light. And I was just wondering if you had any idea of what could be causing that.
How many miles are on it?
105,000.
Okay. Let me explain how it works first. There's two things on the throttle body. There's going to be an idle air control motor, and how we raise and lower the idle is add or subtract air. That's why it's called the air idle air control motor. Okay, IAC. So then we have a throttle position sensor, and the throttle position sensor tells the computer where the throttle's at. So when you drop the throttle down to 0.6. That computer recognizes that as idle. But if the throttle position sensor has been messed with by somebody and it says that it's at 0.4, then the computer goes, oh, I need 0.6, and it's going to raise the idle.
I see.
And then the idle air control motor gets dirty and the passageway gets plugged, so the computer sees a low RPM. And so it keeps telling the idle air control motor, hey, give me a little bit more air. Give me a little bit more air. I don't see anything. I don't see anything. I don't see anything. And so the computer raises up the idle with using fuel as opposed to air. So at 200,000 miles, I'm pretty sure this hasn't been in a shop, you know, on a regular basis. And perhaps you do a lot of the maintenance yourself, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm quite sure that anybody, any gray-haired guy, knows how to fix this because they're going to check the throttle blades, see how much dirt are on the throttle blades. They're going to pull the idle air control motor and see if that's okay. Now, think about this. If we add air to make the idle go up, if we have a vacuum leak, that is an unmetered and unfiltered air being delivered to the motor. So that will raise the idle. And in spite of that, nothing's wrong at the throttle body. The TPS is okay, the idle air control is okay, but we've got an air leak over here in Glendale, and the air leak is causing the idle to go up, and the computer's telling the idle air control motor, shut down, shut, and the idle air control motor, hey, I'm completely closed. The computer doesn't understand why it's idling at 1100 when it's already shut the air down to the motor, but the computer doesn't know that there's an air leak over in Glendale. So,
well, I don't suspect a vacuum leak because it's not constant, it's intermittent. And also, can that idle air control motor be cleaned rather than replaced?
Yeah, but there's typically a procedure necessary to reset it so the computer knows where it's at. So you're going to need to look that up. But I would strongly suggest that you not just eliminate a vacuum leak, because you might chase your tail for a long time, and let me tell you why. The vacuum leak, you don't know what's causing this till you fix it. And right. There's lots of vacuum leaks that come and go with heat. You can have a split in one of the vacuum lines, and when it's cold, it's together, and when it's hot, it gets soft and lets suck air. So I don't think I would eliminate a vacuum leak, because my fear then is let's put an injector in it. That doesn't work. Let's put a TPS in it. That doesn't work. Let's put an idle air control motor on it. Oh, that doesn't work. Let's replace a computer. Oh, that doesn't work. And that's what I see every day of my life. Okay. And so then they come in and they want to know how much I'm going to charge them to diagnose it, but they've already run out of money. and that doesn't make any sense either. So Why would I pay for your bad judgment? Heck, I pay for enough of my own, right?
Yeah, you got a lot of,
Anyway, what part of town do you live in?
Well, I'm actually in Arizona City.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I don't have anybody in that area. If you come into Phoenix, if you go to marksalem.com, I've got lots of shops in town. And I would say that other than the specialty shops, mm-hmm. Like the transmission shops and maybe the diesel shops, I think everybody else could find this and fix it for you. And I think you're going to spend between $75 and $125 for the diagnostic part of it. I think there's a small chance that this is $100 to find it and $6 to fix it. A small chance. That happens every once in a while. Okay?
One more question. How do these guys detect a vacuum leak? I mean, there's so many vacuum lines.
Well, that's real easy. We're going to look at the O2 sensor, and the O2 sensor sitting there screaming 0.1, 0.1, lean, lean, lean. And so we add a little fuel to it, and it goes to 0.9, and we go, okay, well, you're alive. And then and the O2 sensor can be bad, too. Then we turn around and we take propane, and we just kind of wave a propane hose all around it. And when you get over to this area, then all of a sudden the RPMs go up, and you take the propane away, and the RPMs go away. A lot of times we use stethoscopes that are very, very sophisticated, where we put them in our ears, and we wave this sound machine all around, and it'll go like this.
Psst, psst, okay.
And you can hear the vacuum leak. So, and it's going to be running lean. So we're going to see all kinds of lean screaming going on. You know what? A fuel filter can cause this problem because it robs it of fuel. So if you haven't had the fuel filter changed, that's a long shot, but I'd probably take the fuel filter off, blow through it. If it feels like, you know, somebody's got an apple in your trumpet, then, you know, that fuel filter's plugged up.
Apple in your trumpet. Okay.
Isn't that a good visual?
I guess it is.
I mean, you're blowing through a trumpet and somebody stuffed an apple in it. It's going to be a little hard to blow the apple out.
Okay.
I'm trying to just, oh boy, sometimes.
I know.
All righty. Anyway, I need to talk about Action Auto real quick. Action Auto is at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I've known him since the early 80s, and he opened up his shop in 1983. Whatever your repair needs are there at I-17 in Deer Valley, anything north, south, east, or west from that intersection, I can assure you, you're going to have quality workmanship, excellent customer service, a fast turnaround time, and you're going to have an ASC certified or ASC master certified is going to be working on your car. And when I'm talking about master certification, I'm talking one out of 25 techs. One out of 50 techs are masters. So it's an important designation. That means salty. He's been there. He's done that. So that's Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley. When we come back, Nina, you'll be first. And we've got open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Be right back. You're listening to the Under the Hood Show with Mark Salem every Saturday from 10 to 12 here on KKNT. And if you want to join us, you can. The lines are wide open, except for Nina, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Your make, model, mileage, and tell me what your problem is. Nina, good morning, and thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Thank you. Yes, I have a 202 Lexus SD430, and what happens is, and if it hits 45 to 50 to 65, it starts to shake.
Okay.
And I've taken it to three places, and they all said it needs new tires. So this is my third set of tires, and the same thing happens.
Oh, boy. Vibrations are, you have to find the right guy for vibrations. And let me ask you a couple of questions. I understand that this is in a spread of 45 to 65 miles an hour, right?
Yes.
Okay. Does it shake the whole car, including your butt, or does it just shake your steering wheel?
Just the steering wheel.
Okay, that means the problem is in the front end. Now, us gray-haired guys, think about this. We want the steering wheel to be in complete synchronization as the two front heels, the front tires. You would have to agree with that. So, I stand outside your car with the engine running, and I take my right hand and I stick it through the window, the open window, and I turn the steering wheel back and forth, left and right, and I look at the driver's side front tire. I want, when I move that steering wheel just a little bit, I want to see that tire move. And then I'm going to go over to the other side, and I'm going to put my hand on the passenger side front tire, and I'm going to have my wife take the steering wheel and go back and forth. Actually, she doesn't work. She just kind of spends the money and stuff like that. But she, I'm just pretending that she does really help me.
Nina, don't believe a word he says.
So as, as she turns the steering wheel just, you know, left and right a little bit, I'm putting my hand on the front of the passenger tire, and I'm looking at her hand. So if the steering wheel is going left and right, but the right front doesn't move, but the left front does, then I just have to figure out what part of the suspension is just worn out. The steering is worn out. Another thing that we do a lot of times is we put Renee in the car and we have her head down I-10 until she can get the vibration to happen. I'll be in a vehicle behind her and she'll get in the center lane. I'll swing around to the right and I'll look at the front tire and the rear. And then I'll swing around to the other side and I'll look at the left tires while the vibration's happening on the freeway. I'll be able to see what's going on. So, and then the most sophisticated thing is we put four vibration sensors on the car, underneath the car. Now it takes two guys, one guy driving and one guy sitting next to him, and he's got his headphones on and he's listening to all four of those sensors to see where the vibration's at. But frankly, I'm describing some really sophisticated ways of tracking down vibrations, but in reality, the first third of that big long list is where most of us end up. So, what part of town do you live in? I think I can suggest someone to help you.
I live in Anthem.
Okay. Oh, boy. That's way north.
Yeah, it is north. So
I would have to
come. But I don't care. I'll travel wherever I can get help.
Okay. I'm going to send you to Kurtz. Yeah. I'm going to send you to I-17 and Bell. And they're on the northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. So, as you're coming from the south, you're going to turn left on Bell, and you're going to go just past the I-17 exchange, and on your left-hand side, on the north side of the road, is Kurtz. I would call them and make an appointment. I would not make it for Monday mornings or Friday afternoons, because that's going to be a busy time. And I would tell Jeff, you're probably going to talk to Jeff or John, you're going to say, Mark Salem said that he's sure that you can't possibly fix this, but I thought I'd give you a chance anyway. Now, Nina, I want you to know I don't get any money for this kind of thing, but I'm quite sure they can tell you what's wrong. And they're not going to tell you to buy another set of tires, because if you've put three sets on and you still have a vibration, we can all come to the conclusion that tires isn't the problem. So with as many miles, how many miles do you have on this, by the way?
102,000.
Okay. So when you look at it from this point of view, this car's been around the world four times at the equator. So there's going to be a little bit of slop in the front end that's causing the steering wheel probably to shake left and right a little bit. And all we have to do is find that. Now, I'm going to tell you a secret, you know. In reality, what's going to happen is if the steering wheel is shaking left and right when we drive it between 45 and 65 miles an hour, we're going to have one of the old guys lay down in the front of the car and watch the steering linkage, and the other guy's going to sit in the car and move the steering wheel left and right. You'll see a delayed reaction. A tie rod end has two pieces. You'll see one piece move, and then you'll see the other piece move. They're attached in the middle like an elbow joint. So we need both pieces to move at exactly the same. But if we've got one that moves, and then the other moves, and then the other one moves back, but it doesn't take the other arm with it, that means the joint is worn out. And, you know, we can see things like that. So you just you hit a bunch of those three whiskered kids that were born yesterday, and they're just not quite there yet in our industry. But that's what I would do. I'd just come down to Kurt's. Okay.
Is Kurt spelled with a K or is it a C?
It's a C. And let me look and see if I can see the number here. 602-588-2878. 78?
Uh-huh.
Okay. 602-588-2878. Both of us are looking at a poster clear across the radio studio. and
they're at mycarhertz.com as well is their website, I know.
Okay.
It's kind of catchy.
I have one more added. Why does it continue not to shake once I hit 70?
Why does it stop shaking after 70?
You know,
yeah.
Nina, that's a common question, and the answer is really simple. And I'm not being disrespectful. Don't take this way. Nina, I'll be able to answer it once I fix it. All right? That's not an area that I care about. I want to duplicate the vibration. I want to feel it myself. I want someone in the car with me, even if he has to hang his head out the window at 65 miles an hour. I want to know if that right front tire is shaking, and I'll stick my head out the driver's side window, and I want to know if that left front shaking. So your answer can be answered. The question can be answered, but only after we fix your car.
Okay. I'm looking forward to having them fix it, and then I'll call you back.
That'd be fine. I know you'll call me back because I know they'll fix it. All righty. Thank you, Nina. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Does the doorbell ring?
Nope. We have no callers.
No callers.
Oh,
can you believe that?
No, I can't.
Tonight.
And what did he say?
I didn't hear. Oh. You were talking.
I'm going to take my nap now.
Okay.
Oh, Gil's going to take his nap now.
Okay.
Oh, what a convenient thing to do.
Yep.
Anyway, we'll just sit here and whistle.
We have another hour of the car show coming up.
Yeah, we're kind of getting lonesome.
Yeah.
Lonesome.
And then next week, 9 o'clock, back to the Swap Shop Phoenix and buy, sell, trade, dump your junk.
And I'll admit to you that we have our own diesel truck. Fixed a shop truck, and we had a problem with this. Now, folks, I don't want you to tell anybody, but I actually own a Ford. Okay?
Couple of Fords, yeah.
Well, no, you own a Ford, but me, I only own one, and that's the Ford truck that your son bought.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we own this Ford. We struggled because we would send this thing to go get some parts, and when they shut it off and came back out, it wouldn't start. And sometimes it wouldn't start for 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So we worked on that. We worked on the injector O-rings. We worked on the rail. We worked on... And what was... It just would lose fuel pressure. And it would lose oil pressure. Oh, it wouldn't lose fuel pressure. It would lose oil pressure.
Okay.
So we really, really struggled with this. And we called a lot of diesel shops here in town. And they all gave us different advice. One of them said, I guarantee this will fix it. But it was the most expensive guess of all of them.
Yeah.
So as a last resort, we made the guess, and the truck's fixed.
Right.
So I'm not a soothsayer of every single car out there, but I am pretty good because of the people I'm surrounded by.
Yep. You know who to ask if you can't fix it.
Huh? Oh, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times that a quick email to 20 shops saying, hey, have you ever seen this? But here's what's important about that is symptoms. You don't start the conversation off with, I've replaced the following 17 parts because no one cares. Let's talk about the symptoms. Let's talk about what it does, when it does it, hot or cold, left or right, fast and slow, and there's someone at the door.
Yeah, and people can get a bad part or something too. So
yeah, and then the clock stops at that point. If we install a bad part, then we have to further diagnose it. If we circle around to our own tail end, then the issue is at that point that that's on our dime because it's the wrong part.
Sure.
And that does happen, but not nearly as often as you would think. Tom, good morning to you. What's up?
Good morning, Mark. How you doing?
Good. Thank you very much.
Good. I just bought a 2016 Mazda, and I went to put green coolant in it, and then I had read the owner's manual. I have to put in a FL22. Is there that many kinds of coolant? I went over by Pep Boys, by 10 or 12 different colors, different specs. Any clarification?
Welcome to our world.
That's
exactly
right. Welcome to our world. I'm going to change the question. Mark, how many colors of coolants are there? 100. Mark, what do you guys do? We use a universal coolant that's an amber colored, because amber means universal. Well, can I mix it with my pink, my red, my orange, my brown, my purple? Yes, you can.
Are you sure?
Yes, yes, you can.
We
yes,
had some that turned to like gel that one time, but I don't know if it was universal, but I'm just saying.
Well, we use universal, and you can, when we do flushes, mm-hmm, we can never get all the coolant out of the motor. So we not had the problems. Perhaps it was your other boyfriend who had the other shop. I don't know.
No, but we've had Jell-O. Okay. I mean, I don't. I take that back. The customer brought it in with Jell-O in there. They had mixed it.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you a secret, but don't tell anybody else. See, sometimes customers don't tell you the truth.
Right.
Okay. Sometimes they don't. But I promise you, Tom, if you want to add coolant to it, an amber-colored universal coolant will work just fine. Peak makes a good one. And there are other companies that make a good one as well, but a universal coolant would be fine. How many miles are on your 16?
Let's see. It's real low mileage, 30,000.
Yeah, you're not due for a flush. So you got two choices here. You can get the Mazda coolant and get the same color you have now. You could buy a gallon of that, and that would certainly carry it to the 60, 70, 80, 90,000 mile mark where you're likely to need a flush anyway. So if you need to add a little, but are you adding fluid to the overflow jug that has a low and a high mark?
Yeah, I'm putting it in the overflow.
All right. Where is the level now in relationship to the add and the full mark?
Okay. Let's see. The level was down below the add, and then I was so surprised. You know, we took it from the dealer, and it appeared to have been serviced by the dealer, so I was, you know, understandably concerned. You know, usually it doesn't evaporate.
No, you're right, but I don't want you to add coolant to it.
Okay.
I don't want you to add coolant unless you see the jug empty. All right, let me explain.
All right.
When you drive the car and the engine gets hot, we're going to shove coolant in there. That's why the hot line is kind of full. Okay, you with me? Then when you park the car at nighttime, as the engine cools down, it creates a vacuum and a suction, and we're going to suck coolant out of it. They put the low and the high mark, or the cold and the hot mark. Nobody knows if those marks are right. But here's the issue. The issue is, as long as the coolant jug has some coolant in it first thing in the morning, you're okay. You're okay.
Oh.
When you park it at night, I'll bet you it's going to be an inch or two higher than after you drive home. And I'm hoping you drive home more than 10 miles. But after 10 miles of driving and you park it, you look at it, it's going to be close to the hot mark, but it's going to be far higher than it's going to be tomorrow morning. So tomorrow morning, you're going to see that the coolant level from hot goes down, but as long as there's something in it, it's okay. And I promise you, I practice what I preach. So unless you have an empty jug, forget adding to it, okay?
All right, I'll do it. Thanks for...
No problem. Color of coolant.
Yeah.
We're going to be back, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour, we're talking about cars and trucks and RVs and just about anything that you want to talk about. You're more than welcome to join us, and all you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to go to Daniel. He's been waiting. Thank you, Daniel, for holding. How can I help you?
Mark, I have a 2003 Sequoia, and the end of last fall, when it was still warm, when I would sit in a drive-through or something, the AC would start to blow a little warmer, and I noticed that the temperature gauge would go up to hot. When we got into the fall, it didn't have any issue into the winter, but now that we're getting into a warmer season, I have a feeling it's going to do the same thing.
Okay. When you say get hotter, I want you to use the gauge with, you know, cold, quarter, half, three-quarter, hot. So where, tell me the needle.
I would say three-quarter, maybe even 7/8, never into the red. I would always watch, and if I had to, turn the heater on. But it was always when I was in a drive-thru or something Okay. Still.
All right. I can help you with this because you gave me such great information. Think about this. We need airflow across the radiator to keep the engine cooler and to make your air conditioning work well. So we need airflow. That's what fans are for. So you're sitting in the drive-thru. You're waiting for your case of beer for your wife, and it's getting hot. But I bet once you get back on the road, the temperature drops and the air comes back. Am I right?
Good. Yes, sir. Good.
Okay. So it has everything to do with airflow across the radiator. So the question is what's not working? Now, the other day I saw a Jeep with the radiator plugged up with more dirt and more desert fauna than I've ever seen in my life. But he had quite different symptoms. His would run hot all the time, and when he got on the freeway, it ran hotter. So, again, it goes, why are we running hot, and then why does it run hotter? Well, we look at the radiator, and it looks like it's got 14 pounds of desert dirt in it. So, pressure wash the radiator out, clean it up real good, temperature went down. Now, let me explain, too. Normal is between half and three-quarters. Normal. So, on every car out there, normal's half and three-quarters. Now, if you're going up to Flagstaff, it's the middle of the summertime, you got a small trailer on the back, you start climbing hills, and you get to three-quarters, it's okay. No harm, no foul. When you get on the other side and you start going down the other side, it may come back to 5/8, it may come back to half, it's okay. But in your particular case, I am quite sure you have an electric cooling fan that's not working or something like that, because once you start moving, then the force of the air of the speed of your vehicle is causing air to cross through the condenser and the radiator, and then it cools down right away. So there's hardly any question in my mind that you have a bad fan clutch. I don't know if you have a mechanical fan or an electric fan. You could have two electric fans. But something's going on in there that's not turning something on, and something's not working, so that we're moving air across there. And to show you that I'm right, if it's a mechanical fan, if you were to kick it into neutral while you're waiting for the drive-through, I want you to kick it into neutral and bring the RPMs up to about 12 to 1,500. Let me know if that makes a difference. Because if you say, Mark, that makes a difference, then you probably have a mechanical fan. The clutch is bad on it. By bringing the RPMs up, we're locking that fan, and now all of a sudden it's working, and the air gets colder, and the needle starts dropping. Boom. Now, if you can come to your shop with that information, you've saved yourself $100 worth of diagnostic money.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling. Thank you for trusting.
Is your next caller, Ted.
Ted, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I enjoy your show. Always listen to it on Saturday morning.
Thank you.
I think there was a conversation about this earlier, and not necessarily today, but I'm concerned about, I have a CR... The 2014 that requires, at least they say in the manual, it requires the 0-20 weight synthetic oil.
Yes, sir.
And once you get, so I don't know how much many miles it might loosen up the engine a little bit. That oil, less than, I think it's 4 quarts, including the filter, on like $70 for it. Just change the oil and filter, where conventional oil is like, you know, much less.
Sure.
So I just wanted your opinion about if you switch over to something slightly heavier, maybe a 520 regular oil, or whether, in your opinion, whether you think that would work. Once the car is out of its, or especially out of its warranty period.
Okay, all right. What we're missing here is we're missing some important information. Let me explain. Conventional oil is $30 to $40 for an oil change. However, the interval, the oil change interval, is up to 3,000 miles, period. Now, how many miles a year do you drive?
About 3,500.
Okay, all right, fair enough. So if you went to a conventional oil, you aren't going to get a 0-20, first of all, because they don't make it except it's in the synthetic. Let's back up. Take your hands and put them in front of you as if you're praying to your wife because you just got home late, okay? I want you to rub your hands vigorously and push on them. rub your hands as hard and as fast as you can, and by the time you hear me stop talking, your hands have heat in them. You can feel the heat of the friction of your hands. That's your motor. I want to know, if I want to get in between the palms of your hands and provide lubricant to provide lubricant and carry the trash and the heat away, am I better off with peanut butter or sewing machine oil?
Mm-hmm. That much difference, I suppose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you can agree that if we have tolerances of half the thickness of a human hair, getting in there, providing lubricating to that spinning joint, and getting the hell out with the heat, certainly water or sewing machine oil is better than peanut butter. So I'm going to give you two options. Number one, I think you should probably stick with 020, but 020 has an oil change interval from 75 to 10,000. So realistically, that oil in your car will last 2 years. I don't think you ought to go 2 years.
I'm going about a year and a half.
Okay. So that's fine. Because if you go a year and a half, and if you go 3,000 miles or 90 days, and they usually say 3,000, 3 months, well, you're going to change oil four times the first year and two times the second year. You're going to have six oil changes at I'm going to do the math here because it's easier for me. Six times 40 is $240 versus your $70 synthetic. So you're going to save money with the 020 and fuel economy. You're going to save money because you can go 2 years, but I don't want you to go 2 years without having somebody lift the hood on your car. We have lots of our customers in your boat. And so we have customers. Now, here's what I do. I'll put them in a conventional, if I can, and you can't because you have to have a 020. I'll put them in conventional for 3,500 miles a year, and I'll tell them to come in every April, and I'll change their oil. Okay, because conventional is good for 3,500 miles. If it's if they go 5,000 to 7,500, I'll put them in a blended oil, half synthetic, half conventional. But if it's a synthetic oil, then they do 15,000 miles a year, bingo. Come in every April, I'll change your oil. You're going to spend more for the oil change. But I don't want you to go 2 years without somebody checking the tires, the fluids, the belts, and the hoses. Now, if you were my customer and you came in the middle of your oil change stretch, and you didn't come in on Monday morning or Friday night, then chances are that would be something that I would charge you $5 or $10 for. Or if you had a customer number of 876 and I'm at 38,600, you're probably not going to get charged for it at all. So I think you should stick with 020. I think you should take advantage of the long oil change intervals. I just am uncomfortable having you go a year and a half. So split that in the middle, stop by your shop, and just have them look it over.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, for probably 50 years I changed my own oil, and I did kind of my own. I check my tires frequently and check other things frequently, but the technology I realize is they've squeezed down on the tolerances on all the moving parts in the engine.
Yep.
And there's less room, so that's basically what you're saying.
But here's something else. When your car is moving peanut butter around when the oil pump, it's working a lot harder than if it's working on sewing machine oil. So you get better fuel economy. Now, another thing is in the days of conventional, I suspect you and I are pretty close in age. So I suspect you and I were brought up in the 60s and the 70s, the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And back then, motors never lasted more than 100,000 miles. They just wore out and start puffing blue smoke and drinking oil like there's no tomorrow. Today, just the other day, a lady called me. Her and her husband were having a fight. They wanted to know, how long will my engine last? Barb and, what's his name?
John.
Barb and John. And Barb's always the one that's arguing, and she's always wanting me to side with her. So Barb called and said, how long is the engine? And I said, if you don't overheat it and run it low on oil, because Renee, my wife, is sitting here, almost every motor we replace has been overheated or run low on oil.
Yes.
And rarely do we repair one or replace one that's just worn out.
Yeah, I've never seen that.
In years. So the idea is if you don't overheat them or run low on oil, they'll go 200,000 or 300,000 miles. Easy. Yeah. We have cars up to 500,000 miles in our fleet. So in your particular case, and you and I, when we were growing up, engines didn't last that long because they had conventional oil, and they were big pieces of crap anyway, and you didn't get good fuel economy. Of course, we didn't care about fuel economy because gas was 19, 21, and 23.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we wanted horsepower, raw horsepower, and we wanted to be able to spin the tires. So so it's just different today. We want fuel economy. We want the engines to last a long time. So we are in a better place. Ted, we certainly are in a better place, and your car will last 300,000 miles the way you're taking care of it. Okay?
Okay, thanks, Mark.
You're welcome, Ted. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about a repair shop in Mesa that I'm very proud. There's only one shop in Mesa that many shops have applied, but only one made the grade, and that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma are the people that own it. Brian and Thelma come from two families that have been involved in car repair since the 50s in Mesa. These young men and women are really smart, and you only have to meet Brian or Thelma to know that they are the last person on the face of this earth that's going to take advantage of you. They are just good people. I don't remember the last time I had even anybody suggest that Thompson's was a bad shop. Everybody I send to them, they make happy. So if you're in Mesa, no matter where you're at, certainly Main Street and Stapley is centrally located. So I would call for an appointment, I'd have an oil change done, and I'd see how you like them and how they like you. And so that's how you start a relationship with a repair shop, is you just take it in for an oil change. And if you take it in for an oil change and it's a 1995 oil change and they hand you an estimate for $4,000 worth of work you need, then that's the reason you're paying $19.95 is they just went on a shopping spree on your car. Conventional oil today, $30, $35.
It runs about $40, actually.
Okay, what's blended?
Yeah,
what's a semi-synthetic?
That's about the same, actually. And you're right. The
conventional
may be a little bit less, but $40 for a semi-synthetic,
and
$40
then,
and some change for us.
And then depending on how many quarts you need
right.
of the synthetic,
uh-huh.
it's 55 and north of that.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, that's what it is. We'll be back talking about cars, but you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. The lines are open. Give us a call. 21 minutes after the hour, 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to go back to the phones real quick because I need to do some business, but we're going to do Daniel first. Daniel,
okay.
Good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got a 91 Grand Marquis, and I'm thinking of redoing the entire AC system.
Okay.
It hasn't worked for years, and I'm wondering how much that would cost, and would you recommend to do such a job?
Okay, there's so much that it depends on. I don't know if the rubber hoses are going to be okay, considering that vehicle's 18 years old. I don't know if the compressor came apart and filled the system with metal, but we're capable of flushing that. I don't know if the expansion valve is plugged up. I don't know if the condenser's plugged up. So I'm going to tell you on the short side, you're going to be close to $1,000, give or take $100. There's no question you're going to be between $900 and $1,100, and it could get worse. Now, I want to warn you, you're going to have the option. I don't know what refrigerant you take, 134 or 12, but I don't want – what's that?
I think it's 12.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay. It's a 91. It could be either one.
And you did lose somewhere in there 10 years because it's 28 years old. I had to do it because I thought, am I going nuts?
What did 28, I say?
You said 18.
It's 90.
91.
Okay,
I'm 2018.
Sorry. Okay, I missed
anyway.
It. Oh. Okay.
No, that,
all right.
That's not the right bell for that, but okay.
All right. So the idea is yes, you can put it together, and if it's 12, I want you to put 12 back in it and not listen to all those people that don't know. You know what I want to say.
I know, but we have been changing over some of them to the 134, but it's probably not a really easy thing to do.
And the thing of it is that there's an extra cost, and it's not like 12 isn't out there.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of 12 in inventory. And not only that, we're recycling a lot of our 12. So if he has any in there, we're taking it out.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to clean it up and put it back in there. So if he holds 30 ounces and we find 10 in there, then he's only going to pay for 20. But the 134 exchange, there's other things that need. Now we're going to take that bill from 1200 to 2000 because he might need a condenser. He might need,
that's
we have to flush
say.
The entire system to change the oil. We've got a lot of work to do. And he's been without air since 1990. God bless him. You know, if your air fails at 2 o'clock, you're raising hell with me at 2:05.
That's right.
So, anyway, who could do that? What part of town are you in?
Glendale.
Okay. I'm going to send you to Thunderbird Auto. Yeah, 88th Avenue in Thunderbird. Tom can take care of that. In Peoria, you're pretty close to... I'm going to say Grand and 91st Avenue. Are you close to there?
Yeah.
Okay. S&S Tire, I would call them and ask them if they want that. I would call them and ask them to want. They have a pretty full-service garage, so I would certainly call them and ask them. Now, you can drive by Thunderbird and S&S and say to them, take a look at this and give me a ballpark figure the best you can. So you could get two estimates from two shops. S&S may say, no, that's not in our wheelhouse. We want to do suspension, tires, shocks, front-end work, stuff like that. I don't know. But I do know that they do mechanical work. But I don't know if they – this is on a 1 to 10 scale. This is an 8. This is an 8 or close to a 9.
Yeah.
So in your particular – and I know Thunderbird can handle it matter what.
Yes, they can.
So anyway, that's what I would do if I were you, Daniel. All righty?
Right.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Thank you very much for calling. And let me do some business work here. Automatic transmission exchange. And we talk about gray-haired guys. We're talking about Phil. Phil's been there since 1968. You were, what, 40 years old back then? Nevertheless, Phil has been an automatic transmission exchange since 1968. He's been around the block, and he started with the very simple transmissions and transitioned perfectly to the electronic computerized da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Transmission repairs and replacements are exactly what automatic transmission exchange they do, and they've gone to the next level because they have the ability to meet or exceed your OEM specifications. They have the ability, after they rebuild your transmission, if you even need that, to put the transmission on this special device that tests the operation before they put it in your car and looks for leaks, because it's a lot easier to find it and fix it there than after we put it into your car. It'll save some time while the car's in the shop. 40th Street in Washington, Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Let's go back to the phones. Luke, you're up. How can I help you, Luke?
Yeah. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I called you last week for my 1996 Voyager, Plymouth Voyager. I still say that car runs excellent, with the exception of this stopping, sometimes the engine dies
okay.
from time to time. But now, let me give you another scenario of that. That has been improved by putting a new filter. The original filter, a Dodge company was there, so I changed it. And I changed also the fuel from 96 octane to 97, you know, the one in the middle.
Sure.
Yeah, I did that. I see some improvement. But here is the main issue that I need to discuss it today. On the ramp, when I put myself in freeway, and, you know, cars keep pushing, and you need to speed up. And when my gas pedal is over half of the total distance, it keeps tumbling until, you know, it just feels like, you know, the machine begins to die.
I understand.
Then I just think, okay.
Okay.
And then I take, you know, my foot back to from the pedal, and that's the thing, you know, I am experiencing now.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about it. Oh, stop. Because we're Luke, there's a disconnect here. There's a problem. If you don't have enough gasoline to deliver to your engine to keep it to idle, you aren't going to go 60 miles an hour. If you don't have enough gas to keep it running at 600 RPM, you sure aren't going to keep it at 60 miles an hour. So you're trying to tie two things together that don't fit together.
Uh-huh.
So your idle problem is something totally different, because if your truck's capable of doing 60 miles a day on the highway, but it can't do 65, that could very well be a fuel filter or a fuel pump. If the fuel pump isn't developing enough pressure, it's developing enough pressure to get you to 60, but it can't get you to 65. So a simple fuel pressure gauge, a fuel pressure tester, in the car and go drive it and see what the pressure is at 60 and then whatever at 65 or the two different numbers you have. That'll tell you if you need a fuel pump as soon as after you make sure that all the filters are nice and clean, because a filter can cause the same problem. The idle problem is something completely different. So the idle problem is too much air, not enough fuel, vacuum leak, idle air control motor's bad, the throttle blades are dirty, the mass airflow sensor's bad, the ductwork between the mouth of the throttle body or the intake manifold and the air filter's cracked. There's just too many things on that idle side. So, you know, I can't possibly fix it. But if you want me to suggest a garage, I will. But if not, and you want to work on it yourself, then the next thing you need to do is either rent or buy a fuel pressure gauge, attach it underneath the hood, run it through the crack of the hood, bring it into the engine compartment of your car, and you can watch fuel pressure. And obviously, the highest fuel pressure you find, which is probably 40, 50 pounds, it better stay in that 40 to 50-pound range. If you get to 65 and it drops down to 32, then we have found at least a fuel starvation problem that's preventing you from going as fast as you want. So that's kind of how it works. All righty, Luke, good luck to you, buddy. Henry, you stay right there because on the other side of this break, we're going to take you first. That means we have four lines available, 602-508-0960, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. And I want to say goodbye to my wife, Renee, because she's leaving.
Yes, and I'm leaving.
And thank you for keeping me on track and giving me the information I need to look like I'm so smart.
I don't know what you're going to do the next half an hour, I tell you.
Oh, and I do know we're going to have fun, and I'm not going to have you staring at me, shaking your finger at me. I can tell you that. 602-508-0960. Thanks for being here. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. And we're here from 10 to 12 every Saturday if you have a car question. But we're going to go back to the phones because we got people waiting. And we've got open lines. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Henry, you're up. How can I help you?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got a 72 Monte Carlo. And when I shut the engine off, I can't get the key out of the ignition.
Okay. I want you to shake the steering wheel left and right as you try to get the key out.
Okay, yeah.
All right. So I'm assuming the key is in the steering column, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that you can stick the key in, you can go to on and you can go to start. I know that because you're moving down the road. And so when you take the key and you turn it backwards, it goes off, the engine off, but you can't get it into the lock position. Is that what you're telling me? The lock position is where you can remove the key.
Right, and it seems if I move the gear shift lever around, that seems to help.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Oh heck yes. We have to get the steering wheel locked before we can get the key out. And it's not going to be a lock cylinder. It's going to be just an adjustment or a shifter problem or the shifter column's worn out. Or maybe we have to just rearrange all that stuff and synchronize it better. This isn't a big deal. This, while it's sophisticated and somebody had better been in there before, what I hear you saying is if I turn the key, I stop and I put it in park and I turn off the engine, but when I want to turn it counterclockwise one more so I can pull the key out, it won't do that. But if I shake the shifter, it will do that.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. It's entirely likely that the collar, the shift collar, is worn out. Does it have tilt wheel by chance?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. All right. That complicates it even more if it has a tilt wheel. So this isn't that big of a deal. There could very well be an adjustment that we can make. We might be able to take the shift rod and make it a little longer. And if we take the shift rod and make it a little longer, that'll put the park lever up a little higher. So I think this is possible, but I don't think you want anybody guessing. And so I'm thinking, what part of town do you live in?
Sun City West.
Thunderbird Auto. Up there at 88th Avenue and Peoria.
Yep.
Or if you come over to I-17 corridor, either Action or Kurtz, all those guys have been around the block. All of those guys weren't born yesterday. So right. I'm quite sure. And I think you gave us the symptoms just perfectly. And the fact that you can lift the shifter up and then you keep the key will rotate to the lock position and you can pull the key out. That's pretty cool. I mean, it's not a, that we don't get that often. So you demonstrated the symptoms perfectly, and I'm quite sure that that's an adjustable condition. If not, it'll be a shift collar, which is the ring that the shifter fits in. Mm-hmm. And so you pull the steering wheel off, and then you pull that collar off, and you put a new collar in there if it's worn real bad. But I think we can probably just adjust the shifter up a little higher. Okay?
Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
All righty. Good luck, Henry. Ted, you're up next. How can I help you? Ted?
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Ted.
How can I help you?
I've got a 1984 Bronco 2 four-wheel drive, and I haven't driven it for a few years. And you give it the gas. Now, first of all, the accelerator pump.
Uh huh.
It's leaking gas out of there.
Okay.
So I do all the work myself. I'm on disability, and I used to have a good enough brain to figure it out, but I don't now. And so, when you press on the accelerator, what happens is it just like whoa.
Okay.
It wants to die, and then you got to feather it back to get a couple of miles to where you can shift gears.
Okay.
Then it'll do the same again.
Okay. Well, we got to fix the accelerator pump first, and the accelerator pump is to give the squirt of fuel to the engine to transition from idle to cruise. Mm-hmm. So I think you do the accelerator pump just has four screws and a diaphragm in it. So, I mean, I would replace the accelerator pump and get that fuel leak to stop, and I wonder how much better it'll be after we fix the accelerator pump.
Right.
Now, here's something else that you can do, but I want to tell you this is dangerous. Okay, so,
all right.
It's not uncommon for us old guys to get up inside the engine compartment, and we'll have the car in park, and it'll be running, and we'll have the parking brake on, and we'll have someone there with a fire extinguisher, and you know it's and what I'm going to do is it's a carbureted engine, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep,
so that's
5-speed transmission.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to rev the motor up, run, and then I'm going to stuff the throttle to the floor, and I'm going to stick a rag that's wound tightly around my hand so that it won't suck the rag into the motor. I'm going to put it over the top of the carburetor. Whoa. And just before it dies, I'm going to take my hand off. Whoa. Whoa.
Yeah.
Now, that's called an old-fashioned carburetor overhaul, because we're going to rev the motor up and we're going to cover the front of the carburetor with a gloved hand or a rag, and that's going to create tremendous vacuum through the carburetor, and sometimes it'll suck the trash out of the idle circuits and the main jets and it'll run better. There are times that we take that foaming carburetor spray and we build a big mound of carburetor foam all over the carburetor, front to back, top to bottom, left to right.
Yep.
And then we let it walk away from it for an hour. And then we go back in, we get a garden hose and rinse it off the intake manifold. And then we start it up and we do that again. Wah-pah, wah-pah. And we put our gloved hand over the top of the carburetor. I can't tell you how many carburetors we have fixed doing that. So I think that's what I should get the accelerator pump first. And then if the transition between idle and cruise is better, then you're home free. Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Thanks a million.
You're welcome. You're welcome. When we come back, by the way, lines are open, 602-508-0960. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about a story that I recently experienced where I was in trouble with an internet to our business, and the technical service of my phone company and stuff gave me a variety of things to try and check. And after me spending, I think, $550 buying parts that they said were bad, we found out it was their fault. And so I really know, and the car guy gets ripped off too. The car guy has bad experiences too, but I know what it's like to have other people guess with my money, and I'll tell you about that right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me just do some business real quick here. Last week, Bob and Ellen from Larry Harker's Auto were here. Bob and I both have gray hairs. Both of us have been around the block a couple of times. But he is really good and he might be better than me or anybody I know. He is a diagnostician extraordinaire. He has the ability, as many of us older guys do, to know the fundamental checks and the fundamental way a car works. So that makes it easier for us to figure out what's wrong with it. So if you've got one of those cars that, and your story starts out, I've had it to two or three different shops and nobody can find this, then remember this. Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School Road. They've been around since 1967. They got to do oil changes, auto emissions. They can do electrical systems checks, batteries, alternators, water pumps. They can do all that. But Bob can do something that few others can, and that's really diagnose a specific problem. So if you've got a car that nobody can find or fix, then and you live in the Central Phoenix area, or if you want to drive from north, south, east, or west, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's Auto. Real quick. So our internet goes down, but our phone system is good. We have Cox. So we call them up, and they say, oh, you're in an outage area. So we say, fine. So then they say it's going to be over X amount of minutes or by 2 o'clock or 11 o'clock, whatever it was. We call back. They say, no, you're not in the outage. But wait a minute. They said that we were. And, folks, we're completely shut down when we don't have internet because we order parts electronically and we're very dependent on internet. So this goes back and forth. The short story is this. 5 times. And every time we get a different technical person, and each time we get a different issue. We had received a letter a week before that that said, it was a generic letter, we're going to change the IP address of your modem, of our modem, and you need to change your firewall. And the only thing in there for contact was an email address. So my daughter says, what do you think? I said, I'm not changing. The firewall is the way to keep bad guys out of our business software. So I'm not changing the firewall to the address they're giving me. I'm not doing it. So 5-6 calls. They say, you need a new modem. We go and buy one. They say, go to our website, and they'll tell you what modem to get. We do. We go there. We put it in. The lady says, no, you got the wrong one. We said, that's the one you told us to get. They said, well, that's residential. You need a business one. That may work, but it may not. It didn't say that on your website. It said this one was authorized by Cox. It didn't say residential or business. Then the next guy says, you need a firewall. $400 for a firewall. So we go get a firewall. We plug it in. It still doesn't work. We are on the phone with them from, I think, 10 or 11 in the morning until we close at 5 o'clock. So then we bring in IT people on Sunday afternoon. And they find out that Cox did change the IP address from their modem. But I never changed mine on the firewall because I didn't believe it. And none of them told me that. None of them said, let's check the IP address of your firewall. 5 different technical people. And then we ask them, why is it that you changed the modem, but you didn't change our firewall? Well, that's your responsibility. Oh, so you changed it 2 days after we got the letter, but you didn't tell us, and you didn't know that. First it was an outage, then it wasn't. So anyway, you can tell my panties are wadded up. You can also tell I'm changing my phone system as soon as my contract is over with. I'm not going to put up with that kind of ineptness, and I'm spending $500, $600 on guesses from some guy on the phone who doesn't even know whether I'm part of this outage or not. So I'm a little disappointed, but nevertheless, I know what it's like to have someone else guess with my money. Let's go back to the phones real quick. Joel, you're up. How can I help you?
Well, first of all, I hate birds. I really hate birds. They love to use my car as a toilet. Now, the question I got is there anything out on the market that will dissolve and make it easier to clean or dry bird poop?
Yeah, I would take it to a car wash or a local detail shop and have them put a really good coat of wax on it. And that makes it so much easier with a wet rag to remove bird poop. And you might have to do that probably before the summer, during the summer, and after the summer, and maybe a little bit through the fall. But that's about all. So 6 months a year, you'll need a good coat of wax to keep the bird poop away. I think you'll find that it's seasonal at best. But if you're getting bird poop on your car and having a tough time getting it off 12 months a year, then you're probably going to have your car waxed 4 times a year. But I can tell you that we have our cars waxed, and we have a lot of trees on our property. And I understand what you're talking about. But when we don't wax our cars on a regular basis, or we have a service that comes in and does, 5-6 cars at a time, then we do have the same problem you have. And if you want to test my theory, do this. Go get some wax at the car auto parts store and just wax your windshield. And then when they bird poop on the windshield, you'll find out it comes off a lot easier. Anyway, thank you very much, Joel. I haven't had a bird poop question ever, so you hold the record for that. But as long as Glenn doesn't have a bird poop question, I'll take Glenn. Glenn, what can I do for you?
Hi, Mark. I have a question about two questions about two vehicles. But the first one, I'd like your recommendation for oil for a 1965 Chevrolet. I think I want 1030, and I think I probably want conventional oil because I think I probably need to change it a lot because it's got a carburetor.
I agree. Every 3,000 miles, I'd get a name brand, so I wouldn't care if you had – I sell Chevron, but Chevron, Havoline, Kendall, Valvoline, Castrol.
Aren't there – doesn't it need the ZDDP or some crap like that in the oil for the older engine?
No. Zinc. You're talking about zinc.
Yeah, zinc.
That's an old wives' tale. Yeah. Zinc was something that they put in the oil, and they sold everybody on this idea that it's going to help with the valves and all that kind of stuff. If you're using an original engine, then lead in the gas is going to help keep the valves lubricated. But zinc is not on my radar screen. And I've been trained about oil. So, again, I would and everything, by the way, everything forward is backward compatible. So we don't have any oil right now from the 50s or 60s that doesn't have a direct replacement to the 2020s. So okay. I'd stick with the 1030 name brand, and that's what I'd do.
Okay. The other question you may not want to answer because it's a Ford.
Okay.
2013 F-250 diesel. Is there anything you can do to get better fuel economy?
What are you getting
on
now?
On the highway.
Okay.
Pulling a trailer, and the trailer's not real heavy, maybe 2,500, 3,000 pounds.
Okay.
And at 85, 90 miles an hour, I get like 8.5 to 9 miles to the gallon.
You're traveling at 85 and 90 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't help you.
Sometimes they go faster, but you know, California, you can't.
All right. I don't know if you're pulling my leg or not, but I'm just telling you, 8 or 9 miles an hour has everything to do with 80 to 90 miles an hour. The faster the RPM is, the more fuel it's going to drink. My Dodge truck and my Ford truck, the only one I'll admit to owning, are going to pull horse trailers for me at 65, 70 miles an hour. The tachometer's running 1,500 RPM, and I'm popping 16 to 18 loaded up, and I'm popping 18 or 19 running empty. So I don't know about your 8 or 9 miles an hour, unless you're belching black smoke out the tailpipe. But I think you're teasing me because you're saying 85 to 90 miles an hour, and you're probably a friend of mine, and this is a way for you to pay me back for something I did to you. But I'm going to have Gil look at your ID on your phone, and I'm going to get you back. But anyway, thank you, Glenn. Thank you very much. Greg, you're up next. How are you today?
Good. Wish you had him on radar.
I'm leaving that alone too, Greg, but go ahead.
a general consumer question. I subscribe to a consumer advocate. His letter starts with C, very well known. But he had an article on his website posted by AAA regarding top-tier gasoline. And they posted a picture of a new valve, a used valve, and a valve that one valve didn't use top tier and the other valve did use top tier, and they showed the difference between the valves, and the one valve that didn't use top tier was all munged up. And just what's your opinion?
Well, first of all,
consumer advocate.
Okay. I got an answer for this. I know what I'm talking about. Top tier gasoline has a little bit more detergent than all the rest of the gasoline. Let me explain. In a gallon of gas, the detergent is less than the head of a pin or the point of a pin. So the detergent advantage is a marketing strategy. I don't know where they got the valves. I don't know what they're talking about. But dirty valves is not anything we've dealt with. The last time was in the 70s. So I don't know, and I process 6,000 to 8,000 cars a year. So the question to me is, Mark, how often do you find that you needed to do work on a car, a customer's car, because the detergent and the gasoline didn't work? And the answer is zero. Zip. Do I look for up to your gasoline? No, I could care less. Do I have any high-performance cars? I got a Corvette twin turbo and I got a blown Camaro, both street legal. I don't buy top tier for them. I don't buy top tier for my wife's Ford. As a matter of fact, if it ran on water, I'd fill it up with hose. Maybe that's a good idea. I should try that. My Dodge diesel is a diesel, so I don't buy it. My rental cars, I don't buy top tier. I think it's a marketing strategy. I think if we add an eyelash, a soaked eyelash full of detergent into a gallon of gas isn't going to make any difference. So that's my opinion on it. I don't think that you should worry about intake valve deposits or exhaust gas deposits. I think if you have direct ignition, you're going to have a problem with that. That's a whole different subject, but it has nothing to do with top-tier gasoline. So I got a run break, but thank you very much for bringing that up. Ray, what you got on your mind?
Hey, Mark, I got a Toyota Tacoma with over 300,000 miles, and I finally have an SRS light, and it was scanned to indicate a front airbag sensor.
Yeah.
I could touch the sensor, and I could take it off, but I cannot disconnect it. I got these tiny little wires through this tiny little sensor, and it's like, help, how do I disconnect this guy?
Well, wait a minute. Just because it says the front sensor doesn't mean it's a bad sensor. Does the SRI light ever work sometimes and not work sometimes?
No, it at first it was flaky on. Now it's constantly on. And when it got scanned, it pointed out this right front sensor.
I know, but who scanned it?
I did.
So you have
scanner. I have a scanner that does the SRS now.
And how much did you pay for that?
$200.
Okay. Well, the scanners we use to talk to a car are in the $10,000 to $20,000 range. So I'm unclear how you can test the veracity of the sensor with a piece of equipment that I have to use special equipment for. So are you sure that you don't have just a code reader and the code reader says
I'm sorry, it's a code reader. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, the code just means the problem is in Pennsylvania. You got to find the city, the street, and the house number. So my suggestion to you is just have somebody scan it for you. Let's use the right terminology. They're going to scan it, and the computer's going to say, walk in front of the sensor. And I'm being facetious, but it's almost this simple. Walk in front of the scanner. I don't see you. Put your thumb over the sensor. Oh, I see you. Okay, take your thumb off. I see you. I don't see you. Yes, I do. No, I don't. Or yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. So the answer to your question is you're not going to cut the wires. You're going to go all the way back to where there's a connection. So it's not a matter of you cutting the wires. It's a matter of the connection. That's where you're really going to have to work on it. So I'm sorry I can't do a better job than that, but the SRI light will also come on because the clock spring underneath the steering wheel has lost connection. And oftentimes that at 300,000 miles, if you haven't had one of those, boy, I'd be looking at the clock spring too. But it's just a matter, it's a code. So that's something that we need to get past is we need to go two or three levels deeper and start talking to the computer and saying, do you see this? Do you see that? Do you see this? Do you see that? And that's what needs to happen. Anyway, folks, thank you very much for spending your Saturday with me. If you want to talk over email, mark@marksalem.com. 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 I also want you to do me a favor, if you wouldn't mind. I don't ask much of my listeners, but I'd like you to go to azfamily.com/boost. azfamily.com/boost. There is a group of us that would like you to nominate Phoenix Body Works. It's a contest. Greg owns Phoenix Body Works. He's a good guy. He deserves to be recognized. So if you go to azfamily.com/boost, if you would vote for Phoenix Body Works, that would make me happy. I don't ask for much, but if you do that, that would make me happy. I'll see you next week.